Vault.
Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. That's Anderson.
Hey.
I'm Brian Bresch. We're your hosts for today. Buckle up. Top five suicide scenes.
Brian topic.
Not at all Brian topic. Who's the list?
Andy Crest is the name of the listener, but you've been pitching it for the last, ever since I told you that Andy Crest brought it to the table.
Ever since. I think it was like, we were like 3 weeks
suicides.
Ago.
Hey, can we do suicides?
Well, it's one of those, you know what? It's one of those topics, meat and potatoes, as Anderson would say, that I can't believe we haven't done before. I had to look through my lists. And
well, you know, there's a good reason why.
Why is that?
Because most of these are giant, massive plot points that you don't want to talk about.
That's a good point. That's a good
point. Here's what I did. I went extra. I leaned into the hipster in me. Film-wise, hard this week. And my top five are all films that pretty much no one's seen.
Mine, I tend to...
I can't go, I agree. Thanks.
I can't go quite that far, but I will say that I left off some big obvious ones that hopefully are represented in the listener top five. And it looks like I avoided spoilers for the most part. I mean, a character's death. Well, character's death is mostly a spoiler, but...
You know, suicide attempts is a whole separate topic.
Documentary suicides.
It was a tough week, man. I don't know if you know this about me, Brian, because you and I don't really talk, especially about me. But
we talk for about 90 minutes every week.
I grapple with depression here and there, and it's not like I'm I should be on suicide watch. But I think every human being has thought about suicide at one time or another.
Mm.
And I've never been so close that I was worried about myself. But spending time with this topic and watching all the clips, I'm worried about YouTube and my wife just turning on the old YouTube on the smart TV there and looking for things for Atticus now because of all the
that's a good point.
All the clips
the
that I was watching this week. Yeah,
actually, Anderson, thank you very much for bringing that up, because I would be horrified and very much not want to have happen someone to stumble across this maybe when they're searching and thinking about doing something to themselves. And in all seriousness, if suicide is something you're grappling with, you're thinking about, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline.
Look at Brian, being all responsible.
1-800-273-8255.
You know what that just did?
273-8255.
One more time, because I stepped on it.
1-800-273-8255. Right now, they're 24 hours a day, every day.
You know what that did?
Holidays, weekends, what?
That made this show, like, credible.
A little bit,
like,
right?
We're serious right now.
Like, I feel like it would not be out of the realm of possibility for, you know, teens are very susceptible to this kind of stuff. You know, a troubled teen or someone who's desperate
feeling low, feeling blue,
and they, you know, just Google something in their old iTunes or whatever, and comes across this. I would hate for this to be, you know.
I grapple with depression, like I said, and at least once, if not twice a month, less so now that Atticus is here, my son, but at least once or twice a month, it wasn't even like a dark, I guess it was dark if you look at it on paper, but I would just kind of like look at everything, step back, take a deep breath and be like, I just kind of want to quit. Mm. I'm just kind of tired. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
I want to be done with it.
I have had the same thought.
And then you push through. Mm. But so my top five, they're movies that you may have heard about. You may have heard me talk about them. They may have been on other lists. I know a couple of them have made other lists. And they're all interesting, to say the least, as far as the scenes of the actual suicide go. Yet I decided I was looking at this massive, immense list that I had culled.
Yes, there is quite a list of also rans.
All of the
quite a list.
The possible candidates, and I saw a trend, which was about 10% of them were very, very esoteric films.
Okay,
and I said, you know what?
That's where I'm going.
All those fuckers.
How about that?
So that's the way I did it. I want to also talk about Vice. Have you seen the new clips just were released today? You see that? I've been worried about
this is the Christian Bale.
Vice. Christian Bale playing Dick Cheney. I've been a little bit concerned about that from the we included it on our fall winter preview episode. And Christian Bale, he's a fine actor. I like the man very much. I'll see pretty much anything he's in that's not a Terminator. Actually, I saw that.
I actually saw that.
But him playing Dick Cheney, he's not the first actor that pops to mind when you're thinking, you know, trying
Far
to cast Dick Cheney.
Far from it.
Saw the clips today. Oh, not only is he just killing it as the old Dick Richard Cheney over there, but Sam Rockwell is George W. Fuck yes.
I didn't see that. Goddamn
pumped for this movie.
Are you going to have to redo your top five?
Fucking pumped.
Redo fall preview?
I mean, it was on my list.
Oh, was it? Oh, I don't remember that.
It was one of the many. Oh. But this
one of your 12 films
be climbing towards the top,
ascending.
It'd be ascending. There'd be like fingernails of vice, like in the well walls.
It's good.
In my well of films that I'm very excited to see. It's climbing, Brian.
That's right.
It's almost out.
Like Catherine Martin.
So I'm pumped about that. I think it comes out November, late November, December. I don't remember the exact date, but yeah, be excited about that, guys.
All right.
Hey, I'll be in Philadelphia a week from tomorrow.
We almost got to talk about some movies.
A week from tomorrow, I'll be in Philly on my actual wedding anniversary.
Give the date because people listen to this.
October 13th. October 13th in Philadelphia.
I feel like you should be celebrating something that day.
Yes, it's my wedding anniversary. Okay. I just learned the name of the actual like little town or suburb. I'll get back to you on that, but it's fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
In Philadelphia?
It's how do I find this now?
AndersonCowan.com? GroupersTheMovie.com?
But I just have Philly, but it's like, you know, a little suburb, like kind of like Woodland Hills.
Yeah. A neighborhood.
Yeah, a neighborhood. Culver City,
what's
Los Angeles.
What's the name of the theater?
Commonwealth meeting place. Wait till you see the name of this town. I'm into it.
Meeting
Commonwealth.
Place.
Be the 13th.
Is it Plymouth?
October. Plymouth, yes. Plymouth. Meeting 10. You find it?
No.
What?
There's a few suggestions, but I figure it has something to do with those.
All right, you talk for a second while I find this, because it's a great name. It deserves to be spoken on this program.
Philadelphia Anderson will be showing his film on October 13th. That's a Saturday. Mm-hmm. He, of course, will be traveling out there on a Wednesday because God forbid he shows up.
No, that's not true.
An hour late.
I'll be showing up. Here's the name of the town. Conshohocken. 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 Yeah, it's Conshohocken, PA. Look at that. Conshohocken.
Where am I looking at? Oh, wow.
Concha. What kind of a name is that? You know what it is? It's fucking sweet.
Conshohocken.
I'll be tearing it up. And
Conshohocken.
Conshohocken. You guys will let me know what it's actually called. But I'll be there at the Regal and Conshohocken. 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 October 13th, October 20th, be in Boston. And then November 10th, bringing it home here in Santa Ana, Southern California.
It's got to be Conshohocken.
One more little note about the old groupers there, Brian. I don't know if you know this about the film, but you know, I've submitted to, I think it's up to 13 or 14 festivals now. Mm-hmm. I start hearing back in December and they're all like the biggest festivals that were still eligible, that I was still eligible for. I'm not, you know, wasting my time with the smaller ones because those don't really matter. So I think I'm in 13 or 14 consideration right now. And other than that, I'm not really, you know, knocking on doors. I'm not doing anything. Okay. Like I'm sitting in the boat, but I'm not fishing. I'm just having a sandwich.
You're trolling.
You know, I'm not even trolling. Well, I'm not trolling. Yeah, trolling suggests that you get some stuff in the water, right?
I guess so, yeah. Trolling for fish, yeah.
I'm just enjoying the lake. Just enjoying the sea.
A day in the lake.
A fish jumped onto my boat.
Really?
Yeah. Distributor came along and said, "Hey, we want to buy your film." I'm like, "Wow, how'd you?" First of all, they came along. They hit up my producer and they said, "Hey, can we? We're very interested in
how'd
this
they
movie."
How'd they get a hold of it?
Hey, I don't know. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. But they asked for a link, and I begrudgingly gave it to them.
I need hard numbers.
They got back to me 2 days later, and they said, "Hey, we are interested in acquiring this project. What do you want?" And that's where we are right now. Wow. I'm not going to sell to these people unless they offer me the world.
Demands.
But it's kind of cool that a fish just jumped on the boat without me even trolling.
Right, here's what you come back to him with.
Don't 100%
ownership.
Anything.
100% ownership.
Give me money for my ownership of the movie. Okay. So that's a good sign.
See where they go.
That's a good sign. Yep. It's so far so good. So I do believe, and I have believed in the entire time, that this will be distributed at one point. I still don't believe that it will get theatrical release, because that is tough. You know how many movies are made a year, Brian?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be 100.
5,000? 5,000 feature films are made a year. You know how many screen theatrically a year? And I'm just talking U.S.
4,999.
But 750.
Jesus.
And it used to be just 450 just a few years ago. So that number's gone up because a lot of limited release, you know, they only show for a week or two. But 5,000 feature films are made a year. Many of them, like, you know, on your camcorder or, you know, your iPhone, which that's why there's so many now. And only about 700 of those or so get to actually show in a theater.
And how many of those show for more than a week or a
few
days?
Very few. Yeah. I would say probably that number is more like 200, 250. Yeah.
Crazy.
So that's what's going on.
What number Give me a number that the production,
six.
That the distributor would have to come back to you with to even continue the conversation. You know what I mean? Like what number, give me a number where
I got meetings on the one
side
on
of the,
Thursday.
On the one side I'm of the fence, even, it's, you know what? Not interested in the other side. It's like, oh, we can talk.
I'm not taking that bait.
The listeners want to know.
I don't know. It's not really about that. It's about like, what can they do for me in the future? Cause this is all about making the next movie. That's what it's all about. Really? Okay. It's not about paying the bills now.
You want, listen to me. 100% ownership and a guarantee to direct 10 more films.
It's not bad. And this is also a distributor.
It's a starting that, point.
This is also a distributor that you've heard of really? Their movies. I would say 95% of everyone listening to this, these words that I'm saying.
Vivid Video.
You have.
I have heard of those.
You have heard of the movies that they have, some of the movies that they have distributed. Ah. So it's a real distributor.
I love that.
Yeah.
Hey, congratulations. If nothing comes of it, that's still a very cool feather in your cap.
But I don't name names here, and let's move on. Let's move on with the let's flick fast. Okay,
first, I would like you to name names. Secondly, let's confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Anderson, you assigned me a film.
100% ownership.
100% ownership. That's where I start.
That's where I begin.
After that, it's a no-go. You assigned me a film.
I did.
The Old Man of the Gun.
The Old Man and the Gun. Yes.
In theaters now. Mm-hmm. Written and directed by David Lowery.
Barely in theaters right now.
Barely in theaters. How many theaters is it in right now?
I think two.
Really?
Yeah, two on west of the Mississippi.
Jesus.
By the time this airs, though, I think maybe more.
Writer and director of A Ghost Story, which we both enjoyed.
Anderson. Ain't Them Body Saints, as well as Pete's Dragon.
Should I see Ain't Them Body Saints?
No. No, you're okay.
It's highly reviewed. Highly reviewed.
It's slow as fuck. It's very Terrence Malick-y.
It's only 90 minutes. It's weird when a 90-minute movie is slow.
Mm.
It's a bad sign.
What are you talking about? You're talking about Ain't Them Body Saints. Well, let's talk about Old Man and the Gun.
Sorry,
also slow, also 94 minutes.
That's true. Scant. Yeah, 93 is what I have, but a scant 90-ish minutes.
Based on the true story of Forrest Tucker and his audacious escape from San Quentin at the age of 70 to an unprecedented string of heists that confounded authorities and enchanted the public. That's the log line. However, you don't really find out about his escape or escapes, as it may be, till towards the
I was going to say, that was a bit of a reveal.
We're going to do a little Patreon, first time in a few weeks now, where you and I are going to talk about this, and we're going to spoil the fuck out of it.
Okay.
Because maybe the best part of the movie can't really be talked about without spoiling the fuck out of it.
Okay, I'll be interested to see what you think that is. Directed by David Lowery, written by David Lowery,
based on the article, New Yorker article by David Gran, and this is a story with the same title, the same headline was Old Man and the Gun. The Old Man and the Gun was the title of the article, and that's what this movie was based on. I don't like movies that are based on articles a lot of time because they are dull. This one might be up for one of those. I did not dislike
starring Robert Redford, I should point out, Sissy Spacek, Casey Affleck, as many of David Lowery's films are.
Danny Glover and Tom Waits.
89% Rotten Tomatoes. 89%.
Seems high. I don't dislike this movie. I appreciate it for what it is. I think my parents, if they were both alive, well, my mom is, would both appreciate it. I think the older generation will definitely appreciate this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a love letter to films from the 70s.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons why I think Robert Redford and Sissy Spacek were cast. It's also a love letter to Robert Redford's career.
I saw it with some people who picked out many references to Robert Redford films.
There's a lot of Easter eggs
sprinkled throughout.
And the more you like Robert Redford, and I know a lot of older folk who don't listen to this here fucking program, would love this movie. I also was intrigued, well, not only because of David Lowery, but... obviously, you know, I'm going to give, he made one of my favorite movies of the last decade in a Ghost Story. I was also interested because I had been hearing that, you know, Robert Redford said, this is a great movie to go out on. This is the last movie I'll do. And we've all seen plenty of Robert Redford movies in our lifetime, right?
Yep. Would have been a lot of nice ones to go out on.
He has since pulled back on that statement and said, maybe not. Let's see where this one goes.
Sure.
I could see him getting an Oscar nod for this.
That would be justified.
And then maybe, you know, a couple more big paychecks in the old man's career. So here's a story. It opens up. If you've seen the trailer, you pretty much know the entire story.
I avoided almost all information about this. I knew almost nothing about it, which is great.
I saw a number of trailers for it. I should also say that when I say it's a love letter to the 70s film era,
it's set in 1980?
1981.
81, that's
pretty much takes place over a year in many different cities, many of which are like Midwest, Texas. And he shot it on old, grainy film stock. So, I mean, it looks like...
It's got that look and feel.
It's a movie from the 70s, about the 80s, early 80s. And it opens up with him robbing a bank. And he goes inside and he does his thing. And he's very polite and he shows his gun. And it's very different from what we've all experienced as filmgoers. I don't think many of us have experienced an actual bank robbery, but many of us have seen them in, top five bank robberies. Oh,
I'm almost positive
we've done heists.
Yeah, we've not done bank robbery specifically.
I don't know if we have. Because this one's good. So he goes in, he shows his gun, he's very polite, and then he hightails it out of there. There's a brief chase. He pulls off to the side of the road, sees Sissy Spacek happens to be on the side of the highway working on her truck that's broke down, and he ends up striking up a conversation and using her as like a front to get away from the police, to elude the police as well. They go to have a coffee at a diner. And they spark up a relationship. Did I care about the relationship? Nah, not really. I didn't really care too much. It was nice seeing those two old iconic actors on screen together.
We did top five heist films back in 2012.
Right. Well, I don't think we've done bank robberies. So then it continued. He lies to her. And then we continue to see his exploits as a bank robber with his two henchmen or his two partners, Danny Glover and Tom Waits, who play they're like his getaway. They're his partners.
Accomplices.
He's the main guy.
Yep.
They're accomplices.
He's a face man.
That's pretty much the movie. And that kind of happens throughout the movie over and over again.
Yep.
There's a lot of Easter eggs for Robert Redford lovers, like Brian alluded to earlier.
Indeed.
And to the point that when the opening credits are happening, they got and I'm sure they went in, they did this in post, they made this happen on purpose, that the opening titles are kind of like bouncing a little bit, like in the frame. This is a movie that I imagine Quentin Tarantino probably masturbating to later.
I don't have as much to say about this as you do. I'm very curious to see what you want to talk about in the spoiler section, because to me, this was a very fine, very fun, pleasant little movie, like a kinder, gentler version of Heat, all the way down to, you know, the aging bank robber who, you know, falls in love and he's trying to balance a relationship, but also trying to, you know, rob banks. Then there's the whole cop story with his relationship and his, you know,
which is very meh.
It's all tropey. It's
tropey.
You've seen it.
And
I like that it's kind of a pleasant period piece. A
couple great moments in this movie, though. A couple really great moments. Yeah. Also, I should say Daniel Hart did the music for it as well. He was the composer, and he's the same composer that did the glorious, magnificent score for Ghost Story. And there's one section where you can tell, oh, yeah, it's the same guy. Other than that, the composer's doing whatever the director's asking him to do, which is a completely different tone. There's also music throughout most of this kind of helping you along, telling you how to feel. It's a slow as fuck movie, guys.
Can we recommend this to our listeners? You could, in my opinion, you could do a lot worse. This is a objectively good movie.
It goes down fairly smooth.
It's a fairly 3-star movie for me out of 5.
I'm going to be honest with you. I saw it at your horrible theater, right? I don't know if you realize this, and we're not that show, Brian. I don't like to talk about this, but it's happened to me a couple times now when I've gone to your horrible theater over here at West Side Pavilion. And if I don't get like a primo spot on the first level, I have to go down like subterranean.
Oh, yeah.
Do you realize that a bunch of, I would imagine, homeless miscreants use that as a toilet?
Oh, I did not realize that.
Yeah, if you park against a wall, about one out of every 3 stalls against the wall, you will see the defecation.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
It's terrible.
Never once encountered that.
Terrible, Brian.
That would be terrible.
It's a horrible way to start my evening when I'm going to watch a nice old Robert Redford movie.
Yeah, and I imagine it probably hasn't been cleaned up in the 90 minutes since.
At your horrible theater that you love, with the defecation down below.
Well, that's the mall, not the theater.
Yeah, but it's right below the theater, okay? You go in there, and they have some young punk will come in and tell you what movie you just paid to see, right?
You mean an employee?
It's terrible. Like, why do you got to come in and tell me which movie? Now, I've always thought...
Have you ever seen anyone run out of theater panicked?
No. I've always thought, like, what is that for? It doesn't do any good.
Bumblebee!
But you know what it does do? It does harm when they give you misinformation, this fucking guy did.
Really?
He comes in and goes, hey, welcome to the Landmark Theater. You'll be seeing Old Man and the Gun with a runtime of 134 minutes. That means that many of you will go over your parking...
He said that?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, I fucked up and I misread, because I've done that before. Like, yeah. I'll read an hour 34 and it's really 134 right. minutes. Sure, different, right? Very different. Yes. Huge discrepancy there. So he's telling us that, like, you know, where to go to get parking validation. We're still going to have to pay a couple bucks probably. All this bullshit information. I don't know if he's like being a Harmony Korine punk ass just to fuck people. So no, he leaves.
That's incompetence.
It's incompetence, I think. And people applaud it anyways. Why do you applaud that guy?
Why do you applaud the misinformation?
So he leaves, and I'm panicking, and I'm terrified in the theater because people freak out, which I appreciate, but they freak out if they see any illumination coming from a device. So I don't even want to look it up on my phone. Normally, if I was like my crappy AMC theater, I just fucking whip out the phone, and, you know, I'd ask Suri, I'd be like, hey, Suri, how long is this movie? But this theater, like, I'm terrified because they clap at the end of movies and stuff. They're pretentious fucks. So I'm just sitting there going, is it an hour and 34 or is it 134 minutes? And I'm going back and forth in my head. Luckily, this movie, there's plenty of time for me to think about these things as
there's
I'm watching. Long stretches where I can just imagine other things. And it really got interesting, though, when it got into the third act, because I'm like, okay, now is there another hour left or is there another 10 minutes
yeah,
left?
Yeah, because you can see it going either here? Way.
Yeah, I could see it going like, either
way. Is he going back to jail?
That was distracting. But you know what? Looking back on it now, it might have actually kind of helped the process along because it gave it an added element of excitement
the
for
attention,
me.
Yeah. Suspense.
So that fuck
okay, well,
was wrong.
I didn't have the advantage of that.
Mm.
I knew it was 93 minutes.
Or is it?
Or is it?
Why don't we do that to our listeners? This is not a bad movie. It is not like a dull, like pulling your hair out going, why did they make this fucking movie? There's constantly something going on. There's constantly something to look at. There's constantly some good acting going on and some things that you'll remember. It's not a Best Picture nomination. They might give him a nomination.
I guess he's basically getting a Best Supporting
Actress.
She
didn't do much, though. She didn't do a whole lot other than react to him, you know?
Yeah.
This is definitely a throwback movie. And I appreciate it for what it is. I question the timing of it. I think it would have been better like March movie, unless they're actually hoping on these nominations. So I do have a few things that I want to talk about that I can't talk about.
Well, September feels right.
It's you October.
Know, it came out in September.
I think October 5th is when they actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, you know, take your parents.
Indeed. You know, if you mean to spend time with your parents, like, you know, you're not putting in this would be a nice way to take them out, not actually have to spend that much time with them, and take them to see movies.
It's either an hour and 34 minutes or 134
minutes.
This is Catch Me If You Can with a walker.
This is Catch Me If You Can, comma, which you probably will, because I have a walker.
there's a great scene. There's one of my favorite scenes of the year, actually. It happens in a bathroom in this movie.
And it's pretty good.
I can't really talk about it. So we'll talk about that on the Patreon spoiler-rific episode. All right. What else you see?
I saw a film. This is one that I had heard about, forgotten about, and then when I saw it again, I was like, oh, yes, I want to see that. Documentary called Love, Gilda. Love, Gilda. Love,
Gilda Radner.
Gilda Radner. 2018 documentary available now. Oh, where can one see
Ryan's
this?
Graduated from one... the music documentary and he's moving
oh, no,
on
I'm
to
going
the
back.
Comedic
I'm going back.
Documentary.
I'm going back.
Comedian documentary.
This is in a few
it's
theaters. It's in about 100 theaters right now.
It's not an HBO,
HBO
film. It's not an HBO
no,
film.
This is in about 100 theaters right now. So it may be playing near you. It is also available to stream on Amazon Prime right now. I think it's $6, $7, just like the price of like, you know, a bargain matinee. It is directed by Lisa Dopolito. Lisa Dopolito. It is her feature debut, her first ever film. Turns out, so what do you know about Gilda Radner?
That she was the lead female comedian on SNL in the early 70s, like from the, I think the show's inception, right? She was there from the beginning.
She was, in fact, the first person ever cast on
yes.
SNL. Okay. Lorne Michaels was building the cast. He hired her first.
Remember, I used to do that. I produced an SNL show for terrestrial radio there for about 3 or 4 right. years. So I'm familiar with her very early catalog. I had to suffer through that for paychecks.
Okay. Well, then you must know a lot about Gilda Radner in that case.
I saw her doing a lot of things.
You saw her doing a lot of things.
That I found unfunny because I didn't really find anything from that era very
oh,
funny.
Really? Okay, well, interesting. So
not because
this
she's
might
her.
Not, this might not be up your alley.
Probably
it certainly
not.
Was up mine.
Remember, we were talking about Robin Williams just a couple weeks right. ago and like his early stuff, like the 70s stuff. Yeah. Like I cringe. But then like as we progressed, we got like more contemporary. That's when I
right.
found it funny. I don't know. That must just be a generational thing.
I could see that. You're not going to get the same thing out of Gilda Radner because she tragically passed away in 1989 of ovarian cancer, which this film, of course, covers. She was just 40, I think 42 years old. I had almost no perception of her post-SNL. And I thought, which is weird because number one, I'm a big Saturday Night Live fan.
I claim to be,
but I didn't know much about her post SNL life. And I was always assuming like, oh, she died shortly thereafter. Oh no, it was a good decade after she left SNL that she passed away. And of course she was battling cancer a lot of that time, but she was also healthy a lot of that time. She married Gene Wilder, of course. She really struggled. She struggles with a lot of things. The film covers a lot of her personal demons. She had eating disorder. She was actually, you know, Gilda Radner, we all know who, you know, we can all picture her. She played Rosanna Dana, Lisa Loupner, all the characters, the famous characters.
You could be speaking Indonesian right now.
Oh really? You don't know those characters?
Is that a language?
Indonesian? Indonesian?
I don't know if it is.
I don't know if it is. What would they say?
Anyways, I don't understand what you're saying because I don't know these characters.
What I'm saying is she's a recognizable personality. She's thin, but as a child, it turns out she was really overweight. She's actually like a fat kid. And then she struggled with eating disorder for the majority of her adult life. Covered a lot of things I didn't know about her, such as she really struggled with her wrestling with fame. Like, keep in mind, when she was on SNL, it was a phenomenon. Like, she was overnight famous. You know, like a lot of people who become famous on TV, for example, work their way up. They're a little bit famous, a little more famous, and then you sort of know them.
I understand what overnight sensation means.
Yeah, she and the rest of the cast were...
Was she part of National Lampoon at all?
The National Lampoon... You would know this part because she was in the National Lampoon Radio Hour, and we would have seen that portrayed in Drunk, Stupid... What was it called? Drunk, Stupid... Whatever the Drunk, Stone, Stupid, Brilliant, Dead, or whatever.
The National Lampoon documentary.
Yes, and then also the Doug Kenny movie, Futile and Stupid Gesture. Did you watch that?
I did. We flick-fest it together, yeah. I believe.
So anyway, that's covered...
Futile and Stupid Gesture. I was bothered by Will Forte's portrayal.
Really?
His portrayal of Kenny.
Doug Kenny.
Because it was Forte just being Forte. I love Forte. Believe me. I love him. Hmm. But I don't know if he's really the kind of guy to tackle an actual posthumous human being. I don't know if he should be playing real people.
This film had a couple of cool things going for it. One was it actually had access to like Gilda's like private like diaries and writings and things she just jotted down to herself.
Okay.
And they had
They
had a number of recent SNL alumni. They had Maya Rudolph, they had Bill Hader, Amy Poehler, Melissa McCarthy.
All of them just falling over themselves talking about
like
how
reading,
genius she is.
Like reading the, no, they were reading like in her voice, and it was pretty compelling. Interviews with Chevy Chase, Lorne Michaels, Lorraine Newman. Yes, this is good. I enjoyed it very much. I think I'm predisposed to liking this. Love Gilda is right up my alley. It's about something that I love in an era that I don't know as much about and a person I don't know as much about, even though Gilda Radner is one of those iconic people from comedy that everyone should at least be aware of.
Yes. So people should know her name.
Yes. In fact, and you're going to see a lot of the characters that you claim not to know a lot about,
I don't, because I don't know that much about that era. I had to cover it. I had to like watch them all from beginning to end, but I did not ever attach myself to any of it. It didn't resonate with me. It spends
actually a lot of time on her pre SNL comedy career, like you know, moving around the country, doing
it's
sketch comedy.
Trying to make it. And then all of a sudden,
treading
boom,
water.
She's there.
Exactly.
It's also refreshing that she didn't die of a drug overdose.
Yeah, and it talks about, you know, her friendship with John Belushi. Belushi and how she dated she had a lot of the comics, but Bill Murray and her had a relationship for a long time.
Can you tell people to watch this movie? Do you like it?
I want you to understand that...
Okay, that's a no, Brian.
I am predisposed to liking this, and I liked it a lot, which means me to believe that most people will at least like this a little bit. Like,
is it like a 60 minutes piece gone on for 90 minutes?
No, it's done a little more artfully than that. It's I loved the fact that it's semi-narrated by Gilda Radner herself from an audiobook that apparently never came to fruition. Mm-hmm. So it treads the line between 60 minute special and like Montage of Heck, the Kurt Cobain documentary, which was very, I don't know if I call it artful, but very, stylized.
Yes.
This sort of falls in the middle.
I saw a film.
What's that?
A movie that I wanted to see back in February, I think when it was released. And, due to an unfortunate series of events, failed emails and miscommunications, I was never, gifted a link, Brian. And then my own sensibilities got the best of me. And I refused to pay the $5.99, which is absurd, I know. But I should have just... I was so excited to see Bomb City. I should have said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to pay $5.99. I'm going to give the filmmaker James... Jamie Brooks. I'm going to give him a little taste. The Amazon money. And I didn't. It's a punk rock movie, Brian. It's a movie about a punk rocker named Brian Dennehy. And it's a true life story. It's based on a true life story of something that occurred in the, I don't know if the year is actually really that apparent. I would say mid to maybe 87, 86 in Texas, in Amarillo, Texas.
Is Amarillo Bomb City?
Bomb City, yeah, Amarillo, Texas. They actually explain why, too. I didn't understand the title when researching this movie before I saw it. It is now streaming for free, or free in the sense that it's included in your Amazon Prime package. So if you are familiar with Bomb City and you heard me talk about it, or you just saw it on your, you heard about it on your own and you've been wanting to see it, now it is available on Amazon Prime. It's streaming there. And you can sit down and enjoy this 1 hour and 35 minute movie.
135 minutes?
Hour and 35, Brian. It's a callback. I don't really respond to those. I don't really respond to callbacks.
It's the lowest form of comedy.
It really is pretty low.
That and puns.
And scat.
Now,
scat's pretty fucking low. Yeah. Bomb City. So as I already stated, Brian Dennehy, it's the story of Brian Dennehy, who is a punk rocker. He lives in a bit of a flop house with other punk rockers. Those of you who are familiar with Suburbia, Brian, you are familiar with Suburbia.
I have seen Suburbia.
This is an updated version of Suburbia.
Oh, boy.
A much higher quality version of Suburbia.
Okay.
I would like to say better acting. However,
Jameson Brooks.
But he was Jamie Brooks for this one. Okay, he went by Jamie Brooks. That's the director and writer of this film, Bomb City, based on true life events. I would like to say that it's a much better version of Suburbia, but it's not, because it's not as fun. There's not as many quotable lines, and the acting is about equally as stiff. I was a little bit disappointed to see that the acting was fucking stiff. You know, you have a lot of real, actual life punk rockers that are in this movie, and some of them aren't the most talented or qualified of actors, and it's distracting. However, the execution of the movie might be overstylized at times with slow motion, and the lighting is, I like the lighting, actually. It was a bit much, but the real sell on this movie, the real thing that makes this movie, I would imagine, stick and drive its point home, is if you are not familiar with Brian Dennehy's story. I, unfortunately, was already familiar with the story. I knew how it ended, and the whole construct of the movie.
Is he a well-known person?
No, but if you listen to punk rock and if you know about things like that, I really relate to the punk rock section of our society because of the way that they're, from the time I was, you know, a young teenager, like I love the idea of having a mohawk and still being a nice guy and opening a door for an old lady and just blowing people's minds. Like, hey, look, I'm still a good person, even though I look like a fucking asshole. I hate, you know, the whole like judge a book by its cover. I hate jocks. I hate like conventional wisdom. I hate
books.
All this shit. You know what? If I hate books, I can't read too good know-how. All right. I got a disability there, Brian. But, you know, as far as what's going on right now in today's society, right, with the news that's happening right now, this is very interesting. A little heavy-handed. Actually, I should say a lot heavy-handed at times, which is also disappointing. There's a scene with a puppy that was just gratuitous, just to prove a point. Like, hey, look, he's a really good guy. This is Fruitvale Station for white punk rockers, or just punk rockers in general. But it's like the white.
When are we gonna have our Fruitvale Station?
Fruitvale Station. This is it. I wanted to love this movie. I wanted to really, really enjoy it. I liked it. It went down smooth. I think that some people who don't see as many movies and aren't that jaded as far as storyline go, they might enjoy it. If you want to see the punk rock story, and if you want to, if you don't know the actual story how it went down, I think you might have your socks blowing at least down to your ankles.
Is this fairly accurate from your perspective? From what you know of Brian Dennehy?
Yeah, some cartoonish, one-dimensional characters on the other side, unfortunately. But it's the age-old story of, you know, the Socs and the Greasers, the Jocks and the Punkers in this case. And I wanted to love this movie. Mm. But, you know, check it out.
Right.
Bomb City. Also, they talk about it being Bomb City because I guess that's where, like, one of the biggest bombs, one of the biggest nuclear atomic bombs was housed in Amarillo, Texas. Oh. So it also was one of the main targets for the Cold War, and a lot of people that live there, especially the young people, realize that, like, hey, if I think a lot of young people that listen to this, they don't realize what we went through in the 80s, that like there is many people who believe that any moment we could be just wiped out. Like, we live with earthquakes out here in California. You know, people have hurricanes, tornadoes. Right. You can see them coming a little bit. Can't see the earthquakes, though. It's kind of like the same as earthquakes. Like, at any second, a giant earthquake could come and kill us. At any second, we could find out that we're about to be war-gamed. And that was a reality in the 80s. And this was a big selling point in the movie, because Amarillo, Texas, I guess, was one of the main places where in the United States where they had one of the big doomsday bomb. And they actually touch on this in the movie. That they talk about how they believe that they're going to be the first one wiped out by the nuclear holocaust because of this.
Because of their house.
Very bleak outlook on life. And as a result,
we have this punk movement.
Yes.
Wow.
Bomb City.
Bomb City, available on Amazon Prime.
If I saw this movie 15 years ago, I'd love it. And unfortunately, you know, I'm a little more jaded. A little more. I expect more out of my punk rock cinema. You know what I mean?
Coming up next. Sorry, Logan. We will...
I saw Logan start to play the music a couple times and looked at his watch and then started to play the music again. Yeah.
Can people hear the music?
Okay. Sure. Oh,
we've had issues with that. Don't be so sure. Coming up next, we will do the top five suicide scenes. Oh, and somebody made a smart, delightful purchase on Amazon. The Amazon banner that sits atop BrianandAnderson.com. Anderson and Brian? Anderson and Brian.com. Got them all over the place.
Anderson and Brian with a Y.com.
Do you know what the purchase was?
I how
you
would I
probably,
know?
Probably not. You know, just guess. Guess randomly. See how close you get.
A rain slicker.
Very, very, very off. Mm. Someone got the complete Calvin and Hobbes box set.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have this box set in my home.
Do you have to love
God?
It's bound. Do you have to love God to appreciate
Calvin and Hobbes?
Yeah, he's very religious.
Oh, no. Do you know? Oh, I was about to ask you how much you know about Calvin and Hobbes.
Obviously, I know that he pees on a lot of like Fords and.
Yeah, that is bootleg, actually, not approved. That actually is kind of semi-ironic because it is kind of everywhere, or at least it was for a long period of time. Did you know? There was never any at Bill Watterson's request. There was never any Calvin and Hobbes merch. Never any official Calvin and Hobbes merch. Mm-hmm. There was a couple things made for like distributors and private.
That was because
of
God's wishes, right?
No, it's not religious at all.
Did we cover Dear Mr. Watterson in
the
show?
Yeah, okay. I wanted desperately Mr. Watterson to be in there. Did you see?
I don't know what's going on. I'm lost right now. What are you guys?
It's a documentary called Dear Mr. Watterson. Bill Watterson.
Dear Mr. Robinson.
That's right. Bill Watterson is the creator of Calvin and Hobbes, and he's a bit of a recluse. He quit doing Calvin and Hobbes kind of all of a sudden. I don't know, 1995.
God told him to stop, I think.
That's weird that you have this religious thing.
Oh, he's religious.
Not at all. Mm. And he's never put another Calvin and Hobbes out, which is crazy. And there was a whole documentary made about it called Dear Mr. Watterson, and they didn't talk to Mr. Watterson.
Why didn't you tell me to watch that?
I still should. I saw it years ago. My recollection is it's only kind of good.
And because they only cover half the story. Obviously, they didn't cover his love of the Bible.
That's so strange.
Yeah.
There's really nothing religious about it.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from my religious enjoyment of it. Oh,
you know what it might be? Is it might be the bootleg stickers. Not only did they have him urinating,
praying to,
but they had him praying to the Jesus cross and whatnot.
Those are bootlegs. Mm. They have nothing to do
with
it.
It's weird that Jesus, Christians would bootleg
right?
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Other things, probably
they don't do that with Beavis and Butthead, or like you know, they should do that
other
with
cartoon figures.
Like, I want to see Cartman like praying to at a synagogue,
at a bar mitzvah, reading from the Torah. Other things purchased on the Amazon banner include Bush Business Furniture Series C left-handed L-shaped desk with mobile filing cabinet and a right-handed L-shaped desk with mobile filing cabinet. Martin Logan. Motion low profile thin LCR speaker. I have to assume that stands for left, center, right. Samsung Galaxy S9 unlocked smartphone. DeWalt 12-inch sliding compound miter saw. TCL 49-inch 4K Ultra
Smart
HD.
Smart move. I feel bad. I got a
Roku
tweet.
Smart LED TV.
I got a tweet late in the game. It was like 3 or 4 days late, and the guy was saying, hey, I'm buying a new TV for my dad this weekend. What was the TV guys always talk about? And like, it was too late because he already bought it. TCL. Don't sleep on TCL. We love our TVs, and this is not an ad. Great TVs.
Indeed.
A number of listeners have tweeted me saying that they got themselves one. Real affordable price, and you're not going to have any qualms with these TVs.
Say,
they're great TVs.
For the price, you're not going to do much better. In fact, you're not going to do any better. Higher hair, higher compact refrigerator, Seagate Backup Plus Slim 2 TB portable external hard drive was purchased, as well as a Samsung 1 TB internal SSD and a SanDisk 500 GB Extreme portable SSD. 12-pack Halo 4-inch LED retrofit recessed downlight. 23andMe DNA test was purchased, as well as a Brother Genuine super high yield toner cartridges. Emilio Pucci glasses, cat eye for women, cat eye. Streamlight Ultra Stinger LED flashlight with 12-volt DC charger. Timberland Pro Men's Titan Trekker waterproof work boot. Flame King propane tank was picked up, as well as a Jansy Slugger annular cutter. I looked that up. That's like a drill bit kind of thing. It cuts and puts in a slug. Don't know what you use that for. IsoTunes Pro Bluetooth earplug headphones. As I mentioned, the complete Calvin and Hobbes. I put it in Tessa's room. She has no interest. She's a little advanced. It's a little advanced for 2-year-olds. And a Fire TV Cube, hands-free with Alexa and 4K Ultra HD streaming media player. Thanks, you guys.
That sounds pretty sweet, actually.
It does, actually. Thanks for the buying the stuff. How about the movies?
Here are the movies that were clicked. This is the last time I saw you. Better luck tomorrow, the widescreen edition. Better Luck Tomorrow, the widescreen edition. Hey, Logan, you seen that Better Luck Tomorrow?
Yes, I made Brian watch it.
He assigned it to me 2 weeks ago.
Did you see the widescreen edition, though?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, with my eyes, yeah, it's always wide.
Oh,
easy, buddy.
Akira was clicked through. That's a Japanimation movie. I've never seen that Akira.
Is it a coincidence that widescreen TVs originated in Asia?
Oh.
Okay. They go wide the other way.
You can't make these jokes, Brian.
They go wide the other way. They don't go wide up. They go wide horizontal, not vertical. Phantasm 3, Lord of the Dead was clicked through, as well as Phantasm 4, Oblivion, Halloween 4K, The Blues Brothers Unrated, sorry, wrong number, The Greatest Showman, and Solo, A Star Wars Story.
People started to pick up their Halloween.
With bonus content.
Their Halloween viewing. For Halloween parties.
You're so perceptive, Brian. So
picked
perceptive.
Up on that. You can't get anything past me.
You seen Baskin?
Baskin?
Oh,
what is Baskin?
You might be seeing Baskin,
what the fuck is Baskin
for the Halloween season. Oh, Baskin! You know what? Baskin's a big thing over at Cinematics. I might have to bring Baskin over to.
I've seen Robbins.
Baskin. It's a Turkish horror film that you might be enjoying soon. Baskin. All right, back to the program.
No, thank you.
Oh, yes, please. Baskin for Brian. Baskin for Brian. All right, back to the program.
Well, hey there, I'm Katy Perry, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Welcome back. Oh, turn me up. Crank me up. Yeah, way up. Welcome back, everybody. Time to count down some suicide scenes. I'll be honest, Anderson, not a fun topic to research.
No, but you know what is fun? I almost completely forgot about this. Movie that I will be flick-festing next week that I've already seen, but I didn't want to elongate this episode needlessly. Mm. That is Hold the Dark, the new Jeremy Saulnier film.
The one that's set in the bleak winter.
Bleak winter, yes. I did stomach it. I forced it down because it's Jeremy Saulnier. He's one of my favorite new filmmakers. And I will be flick-festing that next week. Listen, people are, especially our listeners, they're down on it. Maybe it's because I went in with low expectations, but kept me guessing, and I actually enjoyed it. If I had no idea who this filmmaker was, I would be curious as to what else this person did. That being said, I will flick-fest the new Jeremy Saulnier film available now on FuckFlix next week on the program.
Good Lord, it's playing at one theater near us.
Well, it doesn't need to play in theaters because you can watch it as part of your Netflix, your FuckFlix package.
Oh, that's right.
The FuckFlix
streaming,
film.
Streaming.
So, yeah, it's worth talking about. We'll be talking about that next week. If you want to watch it and then hear at least my thoughts on it next week, you can do that. You have a full week to do so. I always say for free. It's not for free because you pay whatever
part
it is.
Part of your subscription.
Is it $7.99, $9.99?
I don't even know.
I don't know either.
My guy takes care of it.
Your AV guy.
That's right.
Brian, you're the worst.
My AV guy.
All right, let's get to suicide.
Do you guys pay for the 4K package for your nice TCL TVs?
Fuck the no.
Why not?
Because I watched the 4K in the bedroom with the wife, and she doesn't give a shit. If it's 4K SD, she doesn't care.
Hmm.
VHS, she doesn't.
But if you don't have the 4K package, how do you know?
Wouldn't that only work for things that are shot in 4K?
Yes, and you have
most
to have
most Netflix originals are all in 4K.
Guess how many Netflix originals I watch?
They're standard.
Well, this
now.
Movie would be one.
That would make one.
No, I've not bought into the 4K. Honestly, I didn't really buy into the Blu-ray. I'm not. I'm not Mr. Perfectionist with the technology.
I'm more of a LaserDisc man.
I'm more of a fun, well-told story, characters, and lines.
Be kind. Rewind.
Mm-hmm. There are some movies, obviously, that you know. The brighter, the more clear, the better. But I'm not one of these 4K Nazis.
Put Dunkirk on the 4K, for God's sake.
All I'm saying is Breaking Bad looks really good in 4K.
Mm-hmm. It looked really good on un-4K
looks
as well.
Looks even better.
Yeah?
On all a right. big TCL TV.
Okay. All right.
Easy, buddy. You getting kickback through all that?
I wish.
Logan 4K.
I was going to say.
4K Logan.
Stop paying you. Let's go over. Hey, Anderson, can we make a gentleman's agreement?
No.
That's most unbrand moment you've ever had on the show.
Most unbrand.
On brand moment yeah. on the show.
Mouse just died there.
Mouse is dying.
It is very on brand. Yes. Well, what is the gentleman's agreement?
Next week, can we do a fun top five?
Yeah.
We do something a little more.
Hey, dude, you're the one who is pitching suicide. I got text to prove it.
It's a good topic. It's just a heavy
topic. I put
it
off like two or three different weeks in a row. And then finally, I'm like, all right, fine. We'll do your goddamn suicides.
It's a listener suggestion.
Andy.
Andy Cohen.
Nope.
Andy Couch.
Andy Chet?
Andy Chesney?
What was his name? Crest.
Andy Crest.
Andy Crest. Thanks, Andy Crest, for bringing the show down.
Tom Crest.
I use this as an opportunity to talk about very hipster-centric
I'm excited to see where you're digging on these.
I think that you have
seen... Have I seen any of these?
You may have seen one, and if you have seen one of them, it's because I assigned it to you.
Okay.
You may have not seen any five.
All right.
You might not have seen any of them.
Wow, that's digging deep. You want me to start then? Because I don't want to lose the listener so fast.
Yes.
Number one. Or excuse me, number five.
How dare you suggest that we're going to lose the listeners number because five. Of my picks.
Stick with us, guys. It gets better. It's number five for me. The interrogation room scene in Prisoners.
See, now, you got to preface this, too. Is this going to give something away?
All of these give something away to some extent, I suppose.
It's a problem with this topic.
It is. Not really. I mean... I don't know. There's a scene in Prisoners, 2013's Prisoners.
Love that movie.
Directed by Denis Villeneuve, starring Jake Gyllenhaal as Detective Loki, and show favorite David Dastmalchian as kidnapping suspect Bob Taylor. You know David Dastmalchian from you met as a creepy weird guy from Dark Knight.
Oh yeah, yeah, I love that guy. He's also in Ant-Man.
He's on Ant-Man and the second Ant-Man movie.
Mm-hmm. Both Ant-Man.
Quite the excellent character.
He's in Ant-Man.
By the way, he was like childhood friends with the Adam Carolla Show's own Gina Grad. We should get him.
That does not interest me.
We should get him on this show.
His name sounds like a character from the Star Wars universe.
If anyone knows David Dastmalchian, oh wait, Gina knows him.
Very, very Star Wars universe name, no?
Dastmalchian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very.
Was he in a Star Wars movie?
No, we should have him on though. I love that guy's face.
Yeah,
I just love his face.
He's a good actor.
He had some demons that he had to deal with. I read an article about that guy. Yeah, he was down on his luck, and Christopher Nolan gave him a leg up.
I was thinking Dark Knight is his first credit. His first
living
film
in his
credit.
Car for a while. Yeah, Chris Nolan gave him a hand, not job.
A hand up.
Well, you gave him a job.
Yeah, and a hand.
Yeah,
but not together. Not
glory horse stuff.
And we're not that show.
We are not.
So in Prisoners, David Dastmalchian, Google him. You know who that guy is. You know his face for sure. He is a
so creepy.
He's a kidnapping suspect. His name is Bob Taylor. Detective Loki arrests him and puts him in an interrogation room where he is drawing. He comes across as mentally disturbed, mentally not all together with it. And he's drawing what he says will be a clue or a map, but instead it's a maze, a puzzle. He doesn't quite know what's going on.
Such a good movie. It really is.
It is an underrated movie. And Detective Loki physically confronts, I would say he assaults him, as he's mysteriously drawing mazes. A scuffle ensues. Two other officers intervene, you know, to pull Detective Loki off the suspect, and during which a firearm gets taken.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And used not on other people.
Not on Manchester by the Sea, but not successful in Manchester by the Sea.
That's right. It's very similar to that scene. Very, very disturbing. Very shocking.
Mm-hmm.
You see graphic violence.
Number five for me, Bri. 2016. Christine Chubbuck. You seen this one?
Yeah, it's on my list.
Is it?
The number two.
Are you kidding me?
No, it's not.
You fucking prick. Christine Chubbuck. What do you know about Christine?
The name's, Christine? Not, name's not ringing any bell.
Rebecca Hall played Christine. Christine Chubbuck. Very convincingly, she was the best part of Christine, 2016 film.
Well, the film is called Christine.
Antonio Campos. This is the story of Christine Chubbuck, a 1970s TV reporter struggling with depression and professional frustrations as she tries to advance her career, which ultimately winds up with a live on-air broadcast.
Oh,
of
yeah.
Her
I totally remember this.
Suicide. This is a gunshot.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Gunshot. I also have, I should tell you, of my suicides. Two are gunshots. One is a decap. Make that two is a decap, and one is a slit throat.
A self-decapitation?
One is a, I said two is a decap.
Two is a decap.
Oh, they're both self-decapitations, so yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, suicide.
We'll get there, Brad. Wow, we'll get there. Chances. But my number five is Christine Chubbuck. This is the most readily accessible. Most of our listeners are probably are familiar with this one of my five, 2016 film. Very slow and plodding film based on a real-life story of Christine Chubbuck, who actually did this. She was mentally ill, obviously, and she was butting heads with her coworkers. This one stars Michael C. Hall and Tracy Letts, the writer of Bug and A Killer Joe. Mm. Tracy Letts, Brian. Gotta love that Tracy Letts.
I know Tracy Letts.
You don't know Tracy Letts. But this is called Christine 2016. And you go into the movie knowing that she ultimately kills herself on the live broadcast. That's the whole movie.
Yeah. I mean,
that's, so it's kind of weird knowing that this
woman is
gonna,
it's the only reason for knowing her name.
Yeah, this is why she, I mean, she never ascended to like a Brokaw status. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we perhaps we'd know her as a different person, a different life these
but
days.
Rebecca Hall killed it. Like a lot of people thought she should have been up for best.
Don't say killed it. Don't say killed it.
Probably a poor choice.
It's not a good idea.
Descriptive. Yeah, but she did kill it. She was great. And a lot of people thought she probably should have been up for maybe best actress that year, 2016. That's my number five.
I have one, two, three gunshots, suicides that involve guns. Mm. One that is a neck slitting,
mm-hmm.
and one that
I have
is
one of those.
And one that is
it's not on your list.
It could be, and one that involves
not
windows
on your list.
Windows.
Ooh,
windows.
I wonder if is it a hanging.
Number four.
Is this windows?
No, number four is not windows. Number four. I guarantee this isn't on your list. You know, there's a whole subsection. We could have saved it, but I decided to include one. There's a whole subsection. Sometimes suicides Anderson are played for laughs.
Mm.
Sometimes suicides are played for humor.
How often does that happen,
Fred? It happens occasionally. Airplane, there's a series of people who kill themselves because Ted Stryker's
stories
are very boring.
Much like Gary Sandor's.
Ted Stryker can be a little long-winded. Also, Groundhog Day has a series of humorous suicides.
Mm-hmm.
Groundhog
it's true.
Day. It's true.
Same with Kill, Die, Repeat. Oh, why did I just say that? Edge of Tomorrow.
That's right. A series.
Why
of,
did I say Kill, Die, Repeat?
Oh, there's no suicides.
He kind of like just gives in after a while, if I recall.
He doesn't put up much of a fight.
Yeah, he knows it's going to happen, and he'll just start back player one.
Howard.
Why did I say Live, Die, Repeat?
I don't know. Now
that hurts me.
You
that
said
actually,
it enough times.
They worked
they
their
finally
magic
beat
on
you
me.
Down.
They finally beat me down.
Finally
yeah, kind
you.
Of like the cops did with
Logan,
me speeding.
This one involves my clip. So number four for me is played for laughs.
This is comedy.
It's humorous. The only time I'll be laughing.
Time to yuck it up with somebody
only,
snuffing it.
Humorous. A film I'm quite fond of. Should I make you watch this again? Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy?
No, Brian.
Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy, 1996, directed by Kelly Malkin. Malkin? I think I messed that up. Chris, the main character, he is the inventor of a antidepressant medication. A huge success. And upon celebrating the success of the drug the team has finally been working on for a long time, he confesses, without drinking, he confesses to one of his coworkers that his dad, in fact, suffered from depression. And that's part of the reason why he wanted to make a drug like this, which led to this tragic suicide. Logan, play. There's a flashback of young Chris, and his dad has come home from work, and his dad is he's a glass half empty kind of guy. He's
unhappy.
He says, "How are you, son? Did you clean the windows?" And he's like, "Sure did, Dad."
Let's just hear the clip.
This is not part of the clip. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Did you fold the laundry?" And he said, "Sure did, Dad." "Did you clean the gun? Did you clean the gun, son?" He said, "Sure did, Dad." "That's good, son." okay, I'm gonna go inside. And he goes inside slowly, and his briefcase opens, and the papers fall out, and he just goes, and he goes inside, and little Chris goes back to work on his bicycle out of the front yard, and this is what happens. This is what he hears. We never go.
Hours later, he hit a vital organ and died.
Mm-hmm. 2 hours later.
It's like a Adam Sandler sketch on one of his early albums.
Oh, it's so stupid. Mm-hmm. Logan, you love that.
It was all right.
Logan shrugged.
More of a visual gag, I think.
Number four for me. 2002.
My other foot.
Wonder how I should do this. How should I unravel this one?
I had to include a humorous one.
All right. I'm not going to tell you the title of the movie. I'm just going to read you the background about it. 2002, this movie came out. This is a gunshot.
Saving Private Ryan.
This is from Wiki. Although it was sold for distribution to some 30 countries, the film was not shown in the United Kingdom after director, won't say his name. Oh, I'll say his name. Larry Clark, assaulted Hamish McAlpine, the head of the UK distributor for the film. Clark is alleged to have been angry over McAlpine's remarks about 9/11. Clark was arrested and spent several hours in custody, and McAlpine was left with a broken nose. The film has not been released in the United States since its initial screening at the Telluride Film Festival in 2002. Clark says that this is because the producer's failure to get copyright releases for the music used. I heard otherwise. Mm-hmm. I heard it was more because of Australia's reasoning for banning the film forever. The film was also banned in Australia due to its graphic sexual content and portrayals of underage sexual activity after it was refused to a classification by the Australian Classification Board on June 6th. That doesn't matter. 2003. A protest screening held in Sydney, Australia. Hosted by esteemed film critic Margaret Pomeranz, was shut down by the police. The film remains banned in Australia to this day and has not been successfully appealed. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Ken Park. Ken Park is the name of the movie, 2002. You cannot find it here in the United States because it is still banned. Larry Clark, director of Kids.
It's not even listed on IMDb. That's
it's
so
tough
strange.
To find.
Is it? Wait, there's a film from 2002 called Cutting Horse.
Nope.
Is that retitled?
I don't believe so. I've never heard of Cutting Horse. I don't know what you're talking about. Ken Park. The name of the movie, Ken Park, comes from the title character's name, which is Ken Park. His nickname in the film was Crapneck, because that is Ken Park backwards. Here's a fun little coincidental. Actor Adam Chubbuck.
Ken Park isn't crap neck backwards.
Yeah, it is. Very backwards, Brian. I don't know what your problem is.
Crap?
Yeah. Park. What are
you doing? Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
Why do you got to derail everything?
Well, because I didn't.
Yes and, Brian. Yes. Go back to your yes and ways, okay?
You got it. Not only that, but.
So his nickname is Crapneck in this movie. Adam Chubnick, actor not known by many people, probably. Adam Chubnick, but I do like the fact that his last name lines up with my number five, which is Christine Chubbuck, right? So Ken Park, 2002, Larry Clark's movie. I remember I had to buy this on, I was a big fan of Larry Clark and everything he did back then, namely because of him and Harmony Korine's Kids and other said movies, Gummo. And whatnot, but
you want something weird? I'm going to make sense of all this now, right now. If you type in Larry Clark in Wikipedia, there suggests results. The first one is Larry Clark. The second one is Larry Clark parentheses filmmaker. So I assume that there was a Larry Clark who was maybe a politician or some other.
This better go somewhere good.
The Larry Clark filmmaker is a different Larry Clark filmmaker. Who is much less celebrated and directed a film called Something Horse.
So you're talking about the internet.
Isn't that weird how there's Larry Clark sometimes. And then Larry Clark filmmaker, but they're both filmmakers?
Ken Park was written by Harmony Korine, and it's based on Larry Clark's journals and his upbringing. And he actually wrote a number of drafts before he hired Harmony Korine, who he also hired for to write Kids. Well, actually, I don't think he hired him to write Kids. Harmony Korine wrote Kids and Larry Clark directed it, but it's more of the same. It's very, very raw. It's very uncomfortable at times. The main storyline, I believe it was the cover of the poster, was a young boy in between the legs of a mother. And he was having a relationship with said mother.
There are people entwined on this here poster that I'm looking at.
That's not the original poster. Oh. That I saw. So one of the main storylines, this is a story. It follows like 15 year old, like punk kids who are like skaters and whatnot. It's not unlike Kids. However, it's hard to find over here. And one of the main characters, probably the most likable character in the movie, he happens to be, he has a girlfriend who happens to be having sex with his girlfriend's mother, and they show very graphic scenes.
Oh my.
There's one scene in the movie where a boy ties a rope to his, I believe it's a belt from a robe, and he ties it to the doorknob, and then he masturbates to completion. Oh. You actually see him complete the task, Brian, with fluids and rope and whatnot.
What?
Ropes, Brian. Ropes are produced.
Can I find this movie?
It's very
ropes. Oh, easy, buddy.
Hey, a guy that we used to work with, you and I both both used to work with. Somehow he heard about this movie and he knew that I had a copy of it. Mm-hmm. He begged me for a copy, and he was a creeper.
Was it the bald fella?
Nope.
Oh, because he liked movies. And he liked weird movies.
Bald fella. I don't know who you're talking
about.
The
black dude who was bald. He used to talk to you about a reverse wall all the time.
Ken. It wasn't Ken. Ken's way too soft for Ken.
Oh, really?
Park. Yeah, yeah.
He was an older fella.
Who didn't like me, but he liked young boys. That's all I'm going to say. And he really wanted a copy of this one. Oh, he got his mitts on this one.
Can you tweet the name of the person?
Nope. Oh. Ken Park is the name of this movie, though. Yeah, that's the original right there.
Fun.
That's the so the suicide that I'm talking about, though, happens early on in the movie. And a kid, I believe it's early on, and it's a skater kid. It's a main kid. It's Ken Park and Crapneck. And he's just skating at the skate park, right? He's going up and down ramps, and you know he goes up to a little platform, and he sits down, and he sets up his little video camera on himself. He sits it down on his backpack, so it's facing him, and it's a split screen. It's not split screen, but it's cut back and forth where we're seeing it on the mm-hmm. low defs SD through the camcorder, and he's kind of looking around. He takes out a gun from his waistband, and he's kind of taking it all in right before he. Puts it up to his head with a big smile on his face, and it's very realistic and off-putting and disturbing. So the rest of the movie kind of is him and his story through the eyes of others who knew him. And Larry Clark, mm-hmm. I could only assume, was one of these kids who knew this fella in his childhood. It's raw, it's disturbing, and it doesn't pop like Kids did. Kids also not a fun watch necessarily, but oh, it's memorable.
Ken Park. This sounds unpleasant.
2002.
Any of yours accidental suicides?
No, because that's not an actual suicide.
Well, killing oneself is a suicide.
I could make an argument like anyone who joins the military and then they get sent off to war, that's an accidental suicide if you want to go down that route. Hmm. Right? They didn't plan on dying.
I think dying by your own hand is what defines a suicide.
Friendly fire?
No.
All right. What's your number 3?
It's patricide. Isn't it? Number 3. Oh, man.
Ken Park.
This makes me think, Anderson. Number 3. We need to do another Sniff Tracks. Because we once did The Human Centipede. Number 1, he took himself out. Mm-hmm. The Human Centipede.
He did. See, here, we're talking about the very end of a movie.
I'm not going to mention any more then. Mm-hmm. I did text you.
Feed her.
Yes, feed her. Written directed by Tom Six. The suicide I'm talking about was shocking, was absurd, was unexpected, and was bizarrely motivated. If you remember,
needlessly elaborate, perhaps.
Do you remember the? do you remember the justification?
I feel like it was all part of his master plan.
Who, Tom Six or the number one?
Well,
obviously. Or Dr. Hyder.
Hyder.
You think he knew that number one was going to do that?
I feel like he was prepared. He's a very smart man.
Well, remember,
he knew that it was one of the plausibilities.
He was planning. He, being Dr. Hyder, was planning on drugging the two detectives when they came back with the search warrant and making them part of the. Because he was being annoyed by number one because he was too mouthy.
Right.
He was talking too much in Japanese.
The Asian man. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Cuttlefish.
Is that right?
That's the South Park take.
Oh, okay.
What would you like me to eat? I forget what the other one was. It was either. He was talking because it was Human Centipede on South Park. And he's like, do you want me to have this banana or do you want me to eat cuttlefish? And she's like, oh, he's like, I can't understand you. I think you're telling me that I should eat the cuttlefish. And she's like, no. He's like, all right, I'm eating the cuttlefish.
Easy. What is this, better with a bean?
How do you even come up with that? All right. All right. I think you're saying, and it's a horrible, like, racist Asian accent. I think you're saying kaho kato.
And don't forget, the three dog was gaining the upper hand of Dr. Hyder. They had injured him. The detectives were coming back with, you know, an inevitable, you know, search warrant. Mm-hmm. So things were looking up for the three. And instead, number one, Saturday Matters in his own hands.
Mm-hmm.
Needlessly elaborate.
Perhaps.
As you say. He decided he had lived a bad life.
All right. You said enough. I really have. People really should see this movie because beyond, like, its reputation and the ridiculous, absurd centipede human.
This is not a bad movie.
It's a really good, like, horror thriller. It really is well directed.
100%.
It really is. And it's kind of sad that Tom Six wasted his talent on these other absurd movies that came after it, which were very different in tone and style. He's a good horror filmmaker, and I wish that he had got to do it. I haven't looked him up in a while.
The most impressive thing, honestly, is that it's 100% medically accurate.
I actually asked Dr. Drew on air when I first heard about this movie, and I was very excited about its absurdity. And I asked him if, you know, I told him the whole premise, and I asked if it was accurate. Was that no? Anderson, of course not. No,
he was offended.
Years later, when Catherwood came on the program. I remember him and Drew having a long conversation about the movie, and Drew talking about how genius it was because it actually was accurate. Why am I talking shit about Drew? All right, let's move on.
It's not shit if it's true.
Got a lot of anger. Number three. Oh, this is a decap.
Oh, right? No.
Decapitation.
Self-decapitation. I am very interested.
2012. Fairly recent.
An intentional one.
The Latin title is Post Tenebra Lux.
Oh, you made me watch this.
Did I make you watch this one?
Unfortunately.
Post Tenebra. What do you mean, unfortunately?
This was not a fun watch.
Eye candy galore, Brian. So much to think about and remember. The Latin translate, Post Tenebra Lux, translates to Light After Darkness. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really help you with the title.
That was not
or pleasant. All of the various storylines going on in this movie directed by Carlos Reigadas. I can tell you this. Cannes Film Festival, they slurped this up with a spoon. I read actually one account years ago that there was a 20-minute standing ovation. That's too long.
That's absurd.
I don't know if there's ever been a 20-minute standing ovation anywhere other than like maybe at Hitler camps because they had no seats.
I'm looking at my notes for, how dare you. I'm looking at my notes for Post Tenebra
Lux. I'm not saying concentration camps. I'm saying like his own people. I remember he'd hold those rallies maybe they'd stand there and cheer because he took long pauses and they weren't provided seats.
I'm making a crass joke. I had to wait an hour and 46 minutes for the self-beheading. So apparently I was promised.
Towards the end, yes. And it's something that you'll remember. I remember the opening sequence with the lightning and the soccer pitch that's like kind of carved out of the middle of the jungle here in down there in South America. I don't know why I said here. We're not recording this in South America. But Juan, and here's the byline. Juan and his urban family live in the Mexican countryside where they enjoy and suffer a world apart. And nobody knows if these two worlds are complementary or if they strive to eliminate one another. That's as a confusing byline as you'll ever read. And the movie is confusing with all these different storylines going on.
There's a lot
involving
going on.
A neon devil.
And there's like vignettes.
There's vignettes. It's definitely, if you appreciate eye candy and cinematography, that just watch the opening sequence. It was streaming for the longest time on Fuckflix or Amazon Prime. And I got to tell you, that opening sequence, there's wild horses running about, and this guy, I said Central America, South America, I meant Central America, because it's Mexico, I should have said that, and he's like on the soccer pitch that's literally carved out of the jungle, like it's just like a flat land, and he's there with his little daughter who's like 4 years old maybe, and it's all handheld cameras, but really wide lens, and there's a storm going on. It's one of the most memorable, beautiful sequences you'll ever see. Nothing's really going on other than just the majesty of the actual scene, the mise-en-scene, Brian. Everything that's happening there, and that's real. And the fucking horses galloping. Listen to it.
If you have
AV, good AV at your house, Brian doesn't know what
guy.
His is
because
he's got a guy. But if you got like good surround sound and you know a good even a 2K, sorry Logan, a 4K would probably do it better. Turn off the lights, watch that opening sequence, and you're just transported. It's beautiful. Now, by the end of the movie, He's very frustrated, and there's a shocking sequence that involves him removing his own head.
That was odd.
It was odd. It's kind of out of left field, as is most things in this movie, but...
It doesn't follow... Well, let me just read from the Wikipedia from the very first line under plot. The film deals with a peculiar narrative. And it has a peculiar narrative.
Is there a narrative?
No, there's not.
Not much so. Not so much so. So post-Tenebras.
Wow.
You spell that T-E-N-A-B-R-A-S, I believe. Or no, maybe no S.
Post-Tenebras.
Tenebras. No S, right? Tenebras. T-E-N-A-B-R-A.
R-A-S.
Oh, there is an S.
There is an S.
I have it misspelled on my... I thought there was an S there. Glad that I added that.
Wow.
Post-Tenebras Lux.
We're all over the place. Coming up next, we will have some very different films, at least from me. I don't know if I understand, but I can only assume. Next. Anderson, we got some money to spend.
Football.
That's right. At betonline.ag.
Betonline.ag.
Betonline.ag is where they gave us a few hundred bucks to spend. We're going to spread it around and get some picks, and maybe the listeners give us some picks. But in the meantime, if you want to track some of your favorite, and maybe least favorite, Podcast One personalities, go to podcastonesportsnet.com. They're doing a season-long NFL pick'em. Yours truly is not doing that great, actually. Mm. I did go 4 for 5 last week, though. A good week. Mm-hmm. 4 for 5. 4 for 5. But I am not towards the top of the leaderboard, actually. So, unfortunately, I need to get to make it up to do. But betonline.ag is where you go to make your picks if you want to check the standings of the little competition, podcast1sportsnet.com. But if you go to betonline.ag, if you use that promo code podcast1, you get a 50% sign-up bonus, 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag. Is where you go.
Betonline.ag. It's like your own personal bookie.
That's right. You get all the latest odds, in-game betting.
You don't have to be like my dad and do things like behind closed doors.
I mean, you could
do
that, but that's a really not good way to go.
You don't have to do it anymore. Yeah. I mean, I remember he had like his own like a fake handle. I remember I'd be sitting there, a little kid, and he'd call up on the rotary phone. And he'd be like, yeah, this is Zebra. His name was Zebra.
Really?
Yeah, that was his code name.
Why?
He's like, I'd like to put a dime down on the Raiders on Oakland tonight.
A dime?
A dime, yeah.
Was that 10 bucks?
1,000.
Oh, wow.
That was my college tuition. Yeah. I saw him gambling.
That's why you went to a state school.
Brian.
Go to betonline.ag. Use that code podcast1. Get a 50% sign-up bonus at betonline.ag. Anderson, you got your Untuckit shirt?
Untuckit. I did. We talked about it. I'm looking. You know what? I'm really excited because it's starting to get crisp outside. It's starting to get cooler.
Mine was a little heavier material, too.
Yeah, mine's long sleeve. Mm-hmm. And I did wear it once, but I'm excited to wear it over to the studio. I'll be wearing this thing probably next week. And the one time that I did wear it, compliments.
Really?
It's a modern looking cool shirt. Like, it just makes you look good. Untuckit. We're talking about Untuckit. They're the geniuses that figured out that people like me and many others do not like to tuck in the freaking button downs. You don't have to tuck them in anymore.
Look at me right now. Wearing the shirt untucked.
Mm-hmm. Brian is wearing an untucked shirt. That is true.
That's true. I had the same experience with Untuckit that you did, I think, whereas my wife looked at it and was like, you don't wear that shirt normally. I was like, that's right. She goes, it's a good looking shirt.
Good looking shirt.
Yeah.
I'll be wearing mine over here the next time we do an Untuckit read. I'll be wearing mine so we can actually talk about it. Mine has no collar. There's no collar.
Oh, that's right.
It's cool looking.
That is not a shirt you would normally wear.
No.
Guys, go to untuckit.com.
So many different styles.
Untuckit.com. Check out all the new arrivals. If you use the promo code TFV, which stands for your favorite podcast, you get 20% off your entire purchase. TFV.
And like I said, I actually approached Podcast One about this. Here sponsor because I wanted them to be a part of the program because I believe in what they're doing. I don't like tucking shirts in, and when I first heard my first ad for Untuckit, probably over a year ago now, I'm like, that is a sponsor I wanted this year program, and I finally made the phone call.
Untuckit.com, promo code TFV. We're back. Talk about some suicide scenes.
Yes.
Ready?
True. You having fun? I'm having so much fun.
It's a really good time. Well, I'm having more fun than I thought I was. The research was the unpleasant part.
Right. Because I don't know how you do research, Brian, but mine obviously involves a lot of like watching video clips, looking at lists, you know, Google searches and whatnot, but also just kind of laying around my own body many times when I'm trying to go to sleep or sitting in traffic, just kind of daydreaming about whatever our topic is and just kind of reaching in my mind, trying to think of titles.
Let the mind wander.
And it's not fun when it's like this topic. Not fun.
I agree.
I blame you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I wish one thing I wish I had thought of ahead of time was how many spoilers this would involve. Because I feel like we're not doing a very good job of we're dancing. We're doing a lot of dancing. Dancing around plot points.
No, you know what though? Anyone, like, as far as my three that I've done so far, Ken Park, it opens. It's fairly early. Christine Chubbuck, you know it's happening. That's why there was a movie about her, because she did that. And post Hannibal Lux, most people watch that movie because they hear about that scene.
No such thing as
even though I didn't know about it when I got to see it originally. I got to see it early, and I didn't know, so it kind of took me by storm. It took me by surprise with post Hannibal Lux. But I think most people who have heard of it at this point, it's kind of the most infamous part. It's like hearing of the human centipede, but not knowing anything about the actual surgery. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens very often. However, probably happens every now and again.
Oh, wow. What percentage of people going into human centipede don't know what it's about?
There's a lot of people out there, and there's a lot of ways to watch things.
All right, number two for me. Happens at the beginning of the film, thank God. We can talk all about it. It's also... My answer, you know,
I don't like centipedes because they're creepy, but I like humans.
I like humans, so 50% chance
human
I'm gonna
is
like
the
it.
First part of the title. I'm not sure what that poster is. It looks like they're in a shower.
Yeah,
it could be ecstasy or it could be torture. I see. I'm gonna give it a shot.
Roll the dice.
I'm gonna give it a shot.
I'm feeling lucky. Do you have a stock answer, Anderson? Because one of the things I hate is when people ask. What's your favorite movie? Favorite movie of all time?
I know yours.
It's so hard to... What's that?
Godfather 2, because it's better than the first.
That's true, actually. I'm notorious for thinking that. But when they ask me that, I'm like, how could I possibly? I have 50 movies I would...
Are you serious right now?
Do you have an answer?
That's the whole point of this fucking show, is to have definitive lists week in, week out.
Yes, but the irony is
when I
is
hear
the
people
one,
say that they don't have a number one, or like they can't say their number, their favorite movie... It's kind of absurd to me.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your number one?
Clockwork Orange. Like, hands down. I have like a top 10.
Gross.
What?
I do have an answer, though.
It's easy when you really, really... Oh, I'm going to sound a little bit like a douche here. But like when you really, really love them,
Jesus,
and like you've actually gone through the anti-fantasy in your head of like, what if you had to give all movies up, but you could only have one? That whatever movie you land on, that's your favorite movie.
Transformers 2 or 3.
My buddy Eric Holmes.
Or 4.
One of my editors for Groupers, super smart guy, should be a film snob. I guess he is a film snob, but he doesn't give a fuck. He'll tell you his favorite movie is Gremlins. But he probably knows more about movies than you and I.
Mm.
But he'll just sit there and go, I don't give a fuck.
Well, Gremlins, that's what I'm saying. Movie. He has a stock answer.
It's not stock. It's like true. It's honest. It's
really
personal.
He loves Gremlins that
he
much?
He drives a motorcycle around Colorado Springs, and he's got like a gremlin stuffed animal on the front of it. Yeah.
Okay, he loves it.
And he'll explain to you why it's the greatest movie ever.
Wow. Okay. Well, my point is I have an answer for when people ask me what the worst movie is I've ever seen. It's my number two.
Of course, because you're a negative dude.
It's my number
two.
Down
deep.
The Happening. The Happening.
There's way worse movies than The Happening.
I don't think there is.
Way worse.
I think that's my worst movie going experience from a viewership perspective.
A Day Without a Mexican.
I loved Amore. I never saw A Day Without a Mexican.
So terrible.
I loved Amore. I didn't. Number
Lincoln.
Two. That how dare you?
Like, Little Stranger
Lincoln
earlier
blah.
This
Lincoln
year.
Was blah. Yeah, yeah. It wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. The Happening, 2008, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. I never saw it. Mm-hmm. You want to get me to watch it?
Accountant. Never seen? There's some terrible movies out there.
The Snowman.
The Room. The Snowman.
I never saw that either.
All of them terrible.
Well, The Happening is the worst one I've seen. And there are many suicides in this movie because it is about plants convincing people to kill themselves. So, of course, many people kill themselves. But there is...
This is not your least favorite movie.
It's the worst movie I've ever seen. I would watch it again right now. But it's the worst movie I've ever seen. I would watch and laugh at parts that weren't meant to be laughed at. Mm. There's a great scene at the beginning.
Watch it ironically.
And we've actually... Do you remember way back in the day... We did a listener question episode. It might have been the first or second one we did. This was years ago. And someone asked, what do you guys have talked before about, this scene or this movie is well directed, but that doesn't mean it's good. What do you mean by that? And our example, what we meant, and my example was in The Happening, for example, there's a great scene where people are being, overcome with these, by plants and convincing themselves to kill themselves. And there's one scene that is, it's in Central Park, and it's from shot from a low angle, and you see a cop. It's obviously a police officer, and he pulls out his gun and he shoots himself,
right?
And he drops dead to the ground, and the gun drops to the ground and bounces forward. And then one of a passerby, someone standing nearby. Remember, the whole shot is like at ankle level. The camera tracks, and the guy, the passerby, walks over, picks up the gun, shoots himself, and as the gun drops,
it's a long take.
Yeah, it's a long take, and then a woman, you know, that you can see where this is going.
The gun gets a lot of work.
Yeah, a woman.
Gun's a bit of a whore.
Yeah, a woman picks up the gun, shoots herself, and with
a well conceived shot.
The blood's trickling, and the gun. It's a beautiful shot. It's a great shot, and it's a terrible movie. But it was like this. Is a talent. This is a person who has directing talent.
The movie, I feel like the movie, the idea was there, and it just wasn't that well executed at times. And
you think the idea was there?
It's not absurd. Can you imagine? I can imagine reading like a book on this, like if it was a novel, and it's kind of an interesting story.
You're right. In that case, you're right. The execution was extremely poor.
But the execution in this case for the actual tracking shot, the wonder with all the gun taking multiple victims was well conceived.
Indeed it was.
Okay.
So there you go. Multiple. Number two.
Not bad.
That's multiples.
Not bad. I don't know why you love to scream from the heavens, to the heavens, that you hate a movie so much.
It's the worst film I've ever seen.
People love to hate The Happening.
It's because it's really bad. Mm-hmm.
I need to watch it again. I think it might be my favorite movie.
Let's do Sniff Tracks. Oh, if it's streaming, we're doing a fucking Sniff Tracks.
Actually, that wouldn't be bad. I'd be into that.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Number two for me. This is a slit throat, Brian. 2005 is when it came out. That's when Michael Haneke, the aforementioned Michael Haneke, Haneke.
We can rent The Happening for $3.
No, we're not going to do that. Michael Haneke.
It's not a bad option.
Wrote and directed a film called Cachet.
I love Cachet.
2005. This is about a married couple who is terrorized when a bunch of videotapes, VHS tapes, show up on their porch. And you know what it is, Brian?
What's on
that VHS tape?
Them having sex.
It's very David Lynchian.
Okay.
To the point that actually it happened. I think this exact same thing happened.
Are they committing horrible crimes?
Mulholland Drive. It's surveillance tapes of them. Like the front of their house. And like, what the hell? This is a very, very slow burn. This is not a movie that I would recommend. This is not a movie that I really particularly enjoyed. Speaking of cons.
Easy, buddy.
Cons Film Festival. They loved Cachet as well.
89% of Rotten Tomatoes.
People love it. In fact, I read some board or something said it'd say maybe the best film that came out of the aughts. That's the 2000s. 2009. The story is very ambiguous. Michael Haneke, who is a very he's a provocateur, but he's the one who did Funny Games. You ever see Funny Games, Brian? Did I ever force you to watch Funny Games?
I don't think the remake? Did.
He made both of them. He made the American.
No, that's Home Invasion movie, right? No.
Yeah.
No,
oh, so good, Brian. That was my first introduction to Michael Haneke. Then I watched Benny's video, and Amour is one of my least favorite movies ever made, but he doesn't give a fuck about the audience. He does not care, as is the case with Cachet.
Funny Games on Filmstruck.
Funny Games, so good. We need to do Home Invasions, and I can tell you right now, that might be number one.
Really?
So good. The original and the remake.
You put it over your favorite film of all time, Clockwork Orange.
Ryan, that's we haven't done the research yet.
That's Home Invasion.
We have not done the research.
It's Home Invasion.
Give me a minute. Let me research. All right, so Cachet. I don't want to give too much away here, but the scene is startling. And the man who the upper echelon, I should tell you, it's starring Daniel Auteuil and Juliette Binoche. We know Juliette Binoche, right?
Juliette Binoche.
Yes.
Binoche.
Binoche. It's Binoche. All right. So it's Majid. Majid is the character that I'm talking about, played by Maurice Benichou. Benichou. Maurice Benichou. You know, we all know Maurice Benichou. Estranged.
He's in Amelie, apparently.
He is being accused of being the man behind the camera with these surveillance tapes. And he is saying, I reject these notions that it's me. I categorically deny any accusations. I was not there. I did not do these things to that woman. Oh, not woman. A couple. Sorry, I got caught up with recent events.
Miss Lewinsky.
And he calls over his accuser to his house. And he goes, thank you, George, for showing up. I want you to be here to witness this. And then he proceeds to pull out a knife from his pocket and just all. And Haneke doesn't have a lot of style. His style is cinema verite in the sense that it's just real, but not handheld real. It's just kind of a static shot, and you get to just see the action unfolding.
That's gross.
And he just says, I want you to be here. And he's facing the camera. George is, who is the one who has been surveilled,
right,
is back to the camera. And the man just pulls out a knife and just, and it's quite violent and quick, and it sprays the wall and he falls to the ground. And it's disturbing. It's out of left field. I ruined Cachet for you, but you know what? There's no way to ruin this movie because it's hard to watch. It's very hard to watch because it's so fucking slow.
That's your justification for giving me spoilers?
However, once, I guess. What are you going to do? I feel like
I wish I could be as casual.
Well, here's the thing with Cachet, and I was quite careful when I was making my list because it's really hard to give away to not give away spoilers. But I didn't want to sell this movie to people anyways because I don't want people to like seek it out. However, I guess there is a portion of our audience that might love it. Oh. Well, now you know what happens. But one of the most effective reasons why it's so effective is so very little happens up until that point. Mm. Michael Haneke was actually quoted as saying that it doesn't really matter who was the person doing the surveilling. That's not really the point of the movie. It's like,
director of Amour.
I've said that like two or three times in my pontification.
I guess people didn't get it.
All right, so that's my number two. Cachet.
Cachet.
Are you going to say Benny's Game next?
Number one.
Benny's Video? Fuck.
Number one is Benny's Video. Number one for me is Benny's Video.
Go ahead. What's number one?
Number one. It's actually a tie because there's two scenes from the same film. Mm-hmm. One more shocking than the other. They both involve windows. They both involve hospital windows. Let the right one in. There are a couple of shocking suicides involving hospital windows. One.
All right. Should we give the listener...
You literally just gave away a movie.
I know, but it's cachet. It's not very cachet.
Do you remember these scenes?
Yeah, I do. And I'm wondering like if you should give... I just heard Bill Burr talking about how he hates vampire movies, I think this week or last week's show. And then he's like, oh, wait, but I saw... And he said the American title, the remake.
Oh, Let Me In?
Let Me In, yeah. He didn't even say the title. He's like, oh, that little girl that was a vampire that moved into the complex was her dad.
And I'm like, how'd you know he was talking about the American version?
Because I can't picture... Billy Redface.
Really? Yeah. You know him better than I do.
Could be wrong.
I want to talk about these scenes because they're so great.
Can we let the guy on the bike, who I met, Joe, let him like fast forward a couple minutes?
I don't consider either one of these major spoilers.
All right, good. All right.
We also talked about the pool scene at length, which is, I would say, more. Oh, on several episodes.
I don't know if we have.
Logan, we discussed the pool.
I've always been
pool,
very careful. I've always been very careful.
Let the right one in a few times on this show.
I'm not sure if we've spoiled it, though, on the show.
I want to do top five practical effects, and that's definitely going to be on my list. And I don't think we've actually.
Yeah, I think we've cleverly danced around it.
Yeah, we've danced around. Okay.
Well, then let me talk about two things that are not major spoilers in this movie. One, early on in the film. So, as Anderson said, the little girl's a vampire. She has a caretaker, I would call him. His name is, all I've written down, Hakan. It's
for all intents and purposes, it's her dad in the storyline until she's 4 years old.
She's way older than old.
Yeah.
He's the old man who is Eli's caretaker. He attempts to kidnap people and entrap people to feed Eli.
She's hungry.
She needs human blood. At one point, he botches an attempt to kidnap a boy for her to feed on. And in an attempt to hide his identity about who he is, he's about to get caught, right? Like they're calling the cops, and very shockingly pours acid on his face, hydrochloric acid, and burns his face.
He's very devoted to
Harvey Dent in the Dark Knight. It is quite shocking. It horribly disfigures himself. Eli then goes to visit him in the hospital, but she's denied access, right? Because he's on a restricted floor. Because he's like a wanted pedophile at this point. He tried to kidnap a little boy. And so she scales the outside of the hospital building to his window where he comes to the window. He's horribly scarred. You see this, his face is melted essentially. And, so he allows her to feed from his jugular vein one last time. Because as he does, himself out the window, falls to his death on the snowy floor below.
It's essentially three deaths.
How so?
Well, the first one would be like the acid of the face that would kill a lot of people. Yeah. Second one would be like, you know, getting suckled by a vampire. Yeah. Third one, hurling your body to the terra firma.
The true death. And so finally, later in the hospital, remember right before Eli, the little girl, attempts to find herself a victim by attacking a woman who comes walking by. What's her name? I have it written down here. Virginia. Mm-hmm. Virginia comes walking by. Virginia. Yeah. And she's a middle-aged woman, and Eli attacks her, falls on her from a floor above.
As vampires do from above.
And Virginia's boyfriend shoos her away, like, get out of here.
Like a bat.
And Eli goes, you know, I think he kicks her or something like that. And, but, you know, at this point, Virginia's been bitten.
Right.
And she was admitted to the hospital.
Right.
But Virginia knows what's up. Like, she knows the change is about to happen. She can tell.
How does Virginia know this?
She just can tell. She's complaining. Yeah. She's like, you know, she knows.
She's like, I know you're all saying it's a spider bite, but it feels like a vampire bite.
And so as she's strapped down for her own safety to the hospital bed, she says to the nurse,
the orderly,
that's right, can you please open the blinds to the window? Mm-hmm. And the nurse thinks nothing of it, opens the blinds.
Why not?
Sunlight pours into the hospital room.
Ash.
Virginia literally bursts into flames. Yes. It is quite the pyrotechnic display. Mm-hmm. Quite the display. Two horrific and shocking scenes.
Inspired. Mm. It's my number one vampire film of all time. As stated on our top five vampire movies on the Film Vault many, many, many moons ago.
I think that was that before? I was not invited to be a part of that episode.
Yes, you were not on that show. It was Mike Carano was sitting in for you, and
doesn't sound like me.
He kind of fucked up the entire episode by beginning with just blurting out, "Hey, my number one's Let the Right One In." I just want to tell you that. He's like, "Why would you do that?" Right, Michael. All right, number one for me.
Vampire movies we did in 2013. We finally corrected the record and did it 2013.
We did not correct. Number one for me, 2006. This is Mark Bischoff as
my cousin
Balatoni Lajoska, playing Mark Bischoff. No, Mark Bischoff is playing Balatoni Lajoska in Taxidermia, Brian. Taxidermia.
I love this movie.
Oh, it's fucking number one. Have I made you watch this?
No.
Are you sure? Oh, you would know.
Maybe. I feel like I would know.
This is from Wikipedia. It's an international co-production of Hungary. Austria and France. The film is a metaphorical socio-political retelling of Hungary's history from the Second World War to the present day. Three generations of men, including a pervert that constantly seeks for new kinds of satisfaction, an obese speed eater, and a passionate embalmer. It's the passionate embalmer that I'm talking about. This is directed by Gyorgy Palfy. Gyorgy Palfy. It's the passionate
it's
embalmer.
Probably Georgie, right?
Gyorgy. It's the passionate embalmer played by...
What if it's like Yorgy?
Played by Mark Bischoff. You actually recognize Mark Bischoff. He's a very, very strange-looking, odd-looking fella, and he's the impassioned embalmer. There's plenty that goes over my head because I'm not a Hungarian, much like Serbian film. Like, there's plenty going on in that movie that it just goes right over my head, and I don't have, you know, the half day or to give it the appropriate tutelage to myself to learn about what's actually being said about that movie as far how it relates to social structure over there. As with Hungary, I'm not familiar with Hungary, but this movie it's an allegory. It's a satire of their own time.
There's a lot of subtext going on with, you know,
metaphorical.
Yeah. The time and place that these take place.
This was my number one, I believe, at least made an appearance on top five self surgeries. And it's something you'll never forget if you see it. He loses his main point in life, does Balatoni Lajoska, who is an embalmer. He's a passionate embalmer.
Passionate.
And he takes care of his father, and things don't go so right. And he kind of loses meaning in his life, and he doesn't really have much to live for. And as far as I can tell... The metaphor here is that, you know, it's all about self-preservation and being remembered for something. And he had constructed this mechanism that would allow him to disembowel himself, remove his own organs while continuing to breathe with an iron lung. It was very, very elaborate, right?
Needlessly so.
And then stitch himself up, self-embalming, essentially.
Fun.
And the final, actually the second, the penultimate, Brian, the second to final act of this device that he had created was decapitation, which in essence killed him. And then one final blade comes down to hack off his right arm, giving him a very like a Venus type.
I'll say a Greek marble statue,
which is on display for the end of the movie. This is the main motivating factor to watch this movie is this scene. You have to know about this, much like post Tenebral Lux going in, knowing that this is at towards the end of the movie. You're not going to watch this movie unless you're Hungarian or a total film snob. And you, if that's the case, you've already seen it. Taxidermia, the most astounding suicide I've ever seen in all of the motion pictures I've ever seen.
That's saying something.
Number one for me, Taxidermia. It may very well have been my number one. It could have been on my decapitation list. It could have, it definitely was on my self-surgery.
Can't find it on Just Watch. That's upsetting.
Yeah, I don't know where you can find Taxidermia, but it's my number one, Brad. All right, let's get the fuck out of here.
My goodness.
I have to run over to the after.
You really do. All right, Logan, let's hear the listener top five. Fuck.
Excuse me. All right. Number five is a three-way tie. We actually had a lot of listeners contribute this week, but still had some ties. Three-way tie for number five.
What's wrong with our listeners? They're all like pumped up about suicide.
I guess so.
5A being The Mist.
No. Is that a suicide?
I mean
they willingly allowed themselves.
It's on my also-rans, but I didn't include it because I don't want to fuck it up.
Yeah, we don't need to get into details about what it is.
So good.
Let's describe in detail.
5B.
That's where your instincts go.
5B would be Terminator 2.
Oh, so good. Made me cry.
Again, he cannot,
made me cry.
He cannot self-terminate.
Brian?
That's what he says, the quote.
Made me cry. And he did.
Number 5C.
What?
Is Looper.
There you go. For the good of humanity.
Yeah. All right.
The noble.
Number 4, we have The Rules of Attraction.
How is that on your list?
The bathtub scene, is that the one they're talking about? Or just say Rules of Attraction?
Yeah, bathtub scene.
That was my number one death scene. And we did back to five death scenes back in the day. That was the number one. So can't double down.
Number 3, William H. Macy in Boogie Nights.
Yep, Little Bell.
Number 2 would be Brooks in Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, there's so many great ones.
And the number 1 suicide as voted on by our listeners is Lieutenant Pyle, Gomer Pyle.
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket.
I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
It's a really good. You'd actually like it.
The war film? See
it. The next time I win, I'll assign it to you.
Is it about fashion and some a Yenta makes a jacket out of tin?
No.
And she wins awards
actually,
at the the Met.
No, there's a little more combat involved.
Metal. Also on my list, I thought it was going to be on yours. I know almost was my number 5. Almost made it tied for number 5 because it's one of my favorite scenes all time ever. It's so horrifying and creepy. The Omen. This is for you, Damien. It's all for you. And windows are involved there. So I thought you were going there. Well, but then I realized, wait, you probably never seen
The Omen.
Yeah, because you're Brian.
It was too scary for me as a child, and I never caught up.
Shawshank, of course. Last Days.
I'm not even going to bother
you don't
this.
Even, yeah,
look at my page full of also fans.
Okay, let's not do it. Let's move on.
How's Harold and Maude on yours?
Because they're fake suicides, and if I were to talk about anything else, I'd be giving away major shit, and I actually came up with a way to dance around it, but then I decided to go with all very, very esoteric choices, like I said, and lean into the hipster choices. Yes. You see what I'm saying?
All right. There's so many. We got to repurpose this.
No, we don't, because I don't want to fucking spend another week daydreaming about suicides that I've seen in movies.
All right.
And I kept thinking about it. I kept coming up with suicides. I'm like, wait, no, that actually happened in real life. I have experience with suicide.
Oh, ones you like, oh, what movie was that? Oh, wait, that was my life.
That was a friend of mine or an actual actor. Oh, I kept thinking Owen Wilson.
That's unpleasant.
I'm like, oh, wait, no, he actually did try to kill himself. And it's not a movie. It's not Darjeeling Limited. It's Owen Wilson Life. It did.
Well, Luke Wilson did try to kill himself in the movie.
In Luke, yeah. See, the amount of blood and self-infliction.
It's unpleasant. I want to gamble and wrap this shit up.
Arbaud Dwyer, of course, has to be mentioned as well.
Again, I left off documentaries. But
nice shot, man.
That's right. Hey, man, nice shot.
I've never seen that documentary, actually. I don't think I need to.
Faces of Death?
Arbaud Dwyer.
Oh, Well, he's featured at the end of Faces.
There's a documentary about I didn't know that. He's a Pennsylvania politician who
maintained his innocence.
He called a press conference, went on for 30 minutes before pulling out a gun. And it was a snow day, so a lot of local
kids were home.
Got to watch him, his lifeless body, twitch.
I don't think there was a lot of twitching.
A little bit of twitching. I've never actually seen the...
Really?
I look away.
Oh,
I'm a pass.
Here's what's upsetting about it, because it is at the end of Faces of Death or something. You've never seen a body just slump dead instantly.
All right, let's go.
It's horrifying.
I'm late as fuck.
All right, last week you gambled on Night School.
Oh, that was great.
At the time, there was no Rotten Tomato score. Anderson bid 31 and Brian 39.
I don't feel good about that.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomato score for Night School landed on 30%, making Anderson the winner.
Oh, I almost nailed it. Nailed it.
You're obviously cheating.
Uh-huh.
See how absurd it is.
What do I want to have you watch? What do I want to have you watch?
What's the one that's coming out this week that you wanted to watch?
Let's just both talk about Hold the Dark next week. I'm being a nice kid right here.
Oh, look at you.
So that just means that I'm building up
goodwill.
Goodwill that if you poke after the goodwill has been lent, the anger and the wrath comes hard. So I'm being good now. You know, Old Man and the Gun last week. This week,
Hold the Dark,
which is readily available in your living room. We'll talk about it next week. And then when you say, "Oh yeah, there's a music man documentary. Yeah, yeah, you ever heard of this?" And then the wrath will come
is
hard.
Is Jay Leno taking over?
You kind of remind me of Jay.
Yeah, you guys hear about this?
And then Taxidermy, followed by Cachet. I mean, and I'll make you watch all of them. Ken Park.
Post under by Lux again.
Yeah. Double it up. All right, let's get out of here. Let's go. Oh, I would like to thank Tyler Mayer, who sent us some beer. We did not get to it this week.
That's right.
They're giant, giant canisters. They're like mini kegs.
They'll be split three ways
each. They'll
be
split next week. We will be drinking Tyler Mayer's beer. Thank you very much for sending it over, Tyler. And I will see you in Santa Ana, it says in his note. I will see you at the screening of Groupers in Santa Ana.
How lovely. I'll be there too.
Oh, yeah.
And thank you in person for the beer.
Somebody asked how you're going to do the, because Brian's going to be doing at the end, the Q&A. You're going to be moderating the Q&A. People were asking me how you're going to do that when you haven't seen the movie.
I will have just seen it.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of hard for you to actually do a moderation if you've just seen it. It'll be interesting.
It'll be, all right.
It's usually not how it goes.
How's it going to be difficult?
Usually it's like prepared and people know.
Oh, no. Well, there won't be.
Okay.
That's my answer.
It'd be kind of cool. It'd be like the spectator who has questions.
Yeah, I just saw it. Hear my questions.
I'm not against it, but it's just, it's not normal.
You're right. Someone saw it a week ahead of time. They took notes.
Did Chrono see it before his first moderation?
For sure. He wanted to. He wanted to make sure that he knew what he was, he knew the questions to ask.
I want the theatrical experience.
All right. This week you're going to be gambling on Venom.
Oh boy.
Anderson's most anticipated.
Yeah.
And so what do you know about this? You must know something.
I've heard that Tom Hardy's in it.
You must know something.
I've heard it's not being beloved by the critics, but I also heard the same thing about Hold the Dark, and that's fresh. So Venom, of course, is the new superhero movie that's threatening to... I also heard this. Tom Hardy's quote when being asked about the movie, what his favorite part of the movie was, instead of just coming up with a stock answer, he said, all my favorite parts hit the cutting room floor.
Now I gotta lower it by...
You gotta love the Tom Hardy. Points. You gotta love the Hardy. The fact that he would say that. That probably cost him a few million dollars. I'm sure that that's gonna cost him. Like Hollywood does not take... it does not look kindly on things like that when you undersell a movie.
At the same time, they're probably going to want him for whatever crossover they do with Spider-Man.
I think that hopefully he signed on for the next three. Or
is he really?
The first three, from what I heard.
Oh,
but
boy.
Hopefully this one will be the end. All right. What do you got?
I think that's too high.
Come on, dude. Come on. I got to go.
All right. Junior Seau. Yep. Willem McGinnis.
What is that?
55.
36.
Oh, shit.
I went with Matthew Barnaby.
All right.
Anderson actually laughed. He chortled when I said 55.
It seems high for that horseshit. Every time it comes on, because there's tons of TV spots, and I'll be laying in bed with the wife, you know, just doing research or reading on my phone, and a spot will come on, and I'll just start yelling. And she's like, honey, please, Atticus is sleeping. I'm like, but look at it. It's a fucking cartoon.
Is it really in the 30s?
They're covering his face. They're covering his...
You must know.
I don't know what it is. I just know that it's not being loved.
All right, well, currently, the week before its release, with just 57 reviews, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Venom is 28%.
Ooh. I went way too high.
I don't think you're in any danger here, buddy.
All right, let's get out of here.
Oh, brutal. Thanks, you guys, for listening. Logan, I don't have any actual show notes here in front of me, so you're going to have to help me out.
One second.
You have to help me out here with the listener art.
Music going.
All that shit.
I will fill the void here with saying, hey, yo, Philly, let's do this. $30, and it's going to be an event. It's a screening, and then there's going to be an after party in the theater with booze and food. And if you want to do the full shebang, I'll be showing the shorts as well before that. $75. We all hang out and get a shirt. And then after that, that'll be October 13th. And then after that, Boston, 20th. You guys have heard this many times. If you're on the fence, please come out. I'm telling you, it's a fucking event. It's a lot of fun, and it's something you'll never forget.
I'm looking forward to it already.
And I'm not the dick that I am on the show. I don't
He's
treat
a different
everybody,
kind of dick.
I don't treat everybody like I treat Brian. I'm like the worst version of myself on the show. People are always like pleasantly surprised. Like, oh my God, you're a nice guy. I'm like, yeah, because you're not Brian.
This is hurtful. I'm right here. I can hear everything you say.
All right, this week's listener art is from Sam W. Apropos to this episode.
Oh no. Oh no. What are the chances?
Why are you in the front and I'm in the middle? Don't like that.
Well, I'm an alpha. That's why.
Logan, I'm an alpha.
Look how happy he is. Is that Diana Vane again?
Yeah. She's getting married this month.
Oh, well, this is a wonder. It should be on her invitation.
Oh, my God. All right, I gotta go. I'm going to get there at 9:10, guys. And I told them before 9. Fuck.
Well, they got to pay you more
then. Let's go. Let's say thank you to, who was it who gave us that? You have the name?
Sam W.
Thank you, Sam W.
Thanks, Sam.
Listener or featured artists this week include Phil Neal and the Warnalls, Man X, Janice 414, 1985, Inspector Al, and Kickbush.
Thanks, fellas. If you want to see all of them and get information on them or become a featured artist yourself, AndersonAndBrian.com is where you go. Go to AndersonAndBrian.com to click through the Amazon link that sits atop the website. It costs you nothing and it helps us. If you want to vote on our top fives or even suggest a top five, go to Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault on both. Boston, Philly, see you there. Until next time.
We do it for Vingo!
Thanks for listening, guys. And before we go...
Before we leave, a little service.
Indeed. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free.
Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free.
What are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV.
You can download Pluto TV for free on all of your favorite devices today, including your phone. Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream.
I mean, that covers all of it. Pluto,
pretty much.
TV.